You're listening to continuing coverage in the suitcase murder, the trial of Sarah Boone, from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
But trauma is in the eye of the beholder. Is that fair? Whether a negative experience traumatizes somebody is going to be in the eye of the person who experienced that stimuli, correct?
I only partially agree with you. It's a complicated answer because some of the manifestations of trauma are behavioral. So for instance, when I evaluate veterans who have returned and they may not know that they've been traumatized, their bodily responses that include like difficulty concentrating, they can't sleep, they're hypervigilant, the PTSD diagnosis encompasses outward manifestations. So even though they don't acknowledge trauma, you can still identify it as a clinician.
But still, somebody like a homicide detective or a homicide prosecutor can go to scenes where there are dead bodies, go to autopsies where there are dead bodies, and not walk away with any trauma, correct? Whereas somebody else might.
Right, the environmental, I guess, cues for that person, and also working with law enforcement, they become seasoned to micro traumas. So the first, almost every police officer can remember the first dead body they've seen. So it's in their memory. And then they become accustomed to seeing gruesome scenes. They have increased tolerance over time because it's part of their job. It may not be part of their intimate relationship that they have with someone else.
Now, you brought up veterans. Is something common with PTSD with veterans, something like firecrackers may set them off because it reminds them of acts of war?
That's right.
You're not suggesting to the jury today that if somebody who returns with PTSD from service and hears firecrackers is justified in going outside and just shooting bullets everywhere, correct?
No, that's not what I said.
I'm not saying you did.
Okay.
What this battered spouse syndrome evidence is helpful for is not that subjective mindset, but rather helping to explain the objective circumstances that are presented to somebody and how it might be different from somebody with those experiences. They may view something objectively different.
I partially disagree with your question because I would say that there are incidents or actual events between partners that would be a factual thing, something has happened. And then the person subjectively experiences that as, intrusive or controlling or traumatic. So that is the person's felt or subjective experience. The objective part is what happened.
But again, as a forensic psychologist, you're familiar with the justified use of force instruction, correct?
I'm not a lawyer, though, so I'm aware of it, but I cannot debate fine points of that with you. I'm sorry.
I'm just helping. I'm trying to understand what you said before, because there is a subjective component, whether or not a person believes subjectively that they need to use some sort of force, deadly or non-deadly. You agree with that, correct?
I do.
And then there's also a second component that it's objectively reasonable to the ordinary person to use force, correct?
I understand what you're saying, yes.
And what I believe I heard you mention earlier about battered spouse syndrome was originally it was meant to help understand why people stay in these relationships.
Originally, yes.
Because it may not just be intuitive to somebody who doesn't understand these things why somebody who is abused time and time and time again would remain in that relationship, correct?
That's right.
And again, and I know you're not a lawyer, but if the law has evolved about retreat and not having to retreat and so on and so forth, that kind of changes some of the lens of this, correct?
Judge, I'm going to object.
Approach. Check. Question withdrawn. May proceed.
All right. So you would agree that, hypothetically, if somebody is running down their partner, saying negative things about them, telling them they're unattractive, telling them things that would potentially hurt their feelings, that could be an element of control of a verbally abusive relationship.
It could.
Okay. Propping one up, hypothetically saying, I'm the best thing that has ever happened to you, you'll never do better than me. Is that a potential component of the control that one in an abusive relationship might exert over an intimate partner?
Yes, to try to not encourage their partner to leave them, yeah.
Considering gifts, hypothetically, that one partner has given to another partner, but considering it still to be your property because you gave it to them, is that a form of potential exertion of control over an intimate partner when you give somebody hypothetically a bike, but still consider it your own bike?
I mean, I would not, I don't think that's strong evidence of that. I think that it does happen in relationships and people do that in general, but I wouldn't say that's like really specific to this.
How about hypothetically exerting control over your intimate partner's identification papers, such as a birth certificate?
So that can happen. People will hide things that are required for work, for instance, like your driver's license or things like that.
Now, I'm asking yes or no questions. If Mr. Owens would like you to elaborate further, he's going to have that opportunity in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hypothetically, if one partner destroys another partner's belongings, is that a potential example of exerting control in a relationship?
Yes.
Thank you. Hypothetically, is threatening to or actually using legal process as a threat against your intimate partner in a potential indicia of controlling your partner? For instance, X, Y, or Z, or I'm going to get you arrested.
Yes, I would agree that happens.
Now, I assume you would agree that this cycle of violence that we've described, the tension building, the blow up, and then the honeymoon phase, you would agree that just one of those cycles could be enough to give somebody a traumatic experience if they took it as a traumatic experience.
Yes.
The defendant described her first date with Mr. Torres to you, did she not?
She did.
And at the time of this first date, they had obviously just met that night at a bar, correct?
Right.
They were not financially intertwined, correct?
That's right.
They shared no children in common?
That's right.
They did not live together?
Correct.
And after this description that she provided you, which included him smashing her phone, correct?
Yes.
Hitting her, first time she'd ever been hit in her life, correct?
Yes.
And making her crouch in like a fetal position on the porch for several hours to the point where it hurt her back, correct?
Yes.
Threatened to sodomize her.
Correct.
And she described that she was all bruised up, correct?
Yes.
After that, this is the first time she had ever met him, correct?
I believe so, yes.
There was a second date, correct?
Yes.
Despite not having any of that intertwinement that we went through prior to this description, correct?
That's right.
Now, it is possible under what we've discussed, right? Just that quick one date can be that buildup of tension and blow up, correct?
Yes.
But it's different, hypothetically, than saying a spouse who is financially dependent on his or her other spouse in a 20-year marriage with a house full of kids than a first date, correct? You would agree in severity in the intertwinement, there's a difference.
There's a difference in intertwinement. The pattern can be exactly the same.
Now, of course, there are many different reasons why somebody will stay in a relationship that, when perceived from the outside, others would say is abusive, correct?
That's right.
The defendant described that she felt like she was making Mr. Torres a better person, correct?
That's right.
A better father,
yes.
Correct?
Right.
A better ex-husband?
With phone calls, yes.
And she would tell him to call his children?
That's right.
Make sure that he sent them Christmas gifts.
Yes.
And make sure he sent his ex-wife money when she asked, correct?
Yes.
So you would agree those are indicia, or indicators, sorry.
Understand.
I know you know. that perhaps she wasn't necessarily financially dependent on Mr. Torres, correct? I'm not saying conclusion, but those are indicators, if you're saying, please spend your money elsewhere, that I don't need your money, correct?
No, because even if there was money that was needed by Ms. Boone, her tendency to put the needs of her partner before her would direct her to do exactly that, like make him better, make him have the availability to visit his children, send them presents, even if she's the one that needed the money.
And in her perspective, Mr. Torres needed her to do this to make him a better person, correct?
I believe that, yes.
How many years of her adult life did she describe working?
I don't think she gave it a specific quantity. We just went through a variety of her jobs that she had in the past.
And, you know, she was low 40s when she met you?
Four years ago? That's right.
So she had been 18 for probably about 24 years. Did she give you a 24 plus 18, 42?
Oh, you said for 24 years. And that's why I was confused. You can't be 18 for 24 years. But did 24 years ago, I would agree.
Did her work history kind of flesh out to be 24 years is what I'm asking?
I'm not certain.
And at the time, in the apartment in 2020, she had not been working, correct?
That's right.
And had not been working for some time.
That's right.
And what she was doing was living off of the settlement that she had been bought out of with her husband. It was lump sum, plus $1,000 a month in alimony and $100 a month in child support, correct?
Yes.
And it was Mr. Torres who would work, correct?
He worked at Ace Hardware, I think.
When he would show up.
Right.
Sometimes he didn't show up, is what she indicated, correct?
Yes.
Because of his drinking problems.
Yes.
Did she describe to you, well, let me strike that. She did describe to you one instance, at least, where violence occurred in front of her child, correct?
Yes.
And that her child had gone to school and reported it, correct?
Yes.
And you understand, as a forensic psychologist, that teachers are mandatory reporters, correct?
That's right.
Did you review any DCF records in this case?
No, I didn't receive any DCF records.
Did Ms. Boone ever indicate to you at any point in time she became too afraid to let Lucas come over to the house?
Yes, there were times where she would ask Mr. Boone, so Brian Boone, to not bring him there.
And Mr. Boone was aware of this because she would say things like that, correct?
Yes.
And at different times, she told you that she would go over to Mr. Boone's house to escape the violence of Mr. Torres.
That's right.
And February 24th of 2020, the child was scheduled to be picked up by Ms. Boone, correct?
That's right.
Despite everything that she was aware of and what Mr. Brian Boone was aware of, correct?
Right.
And you saw in her police interview that she swore on the life of her son that she was telling them the truth, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Object.
Approach. Objection sustained.
I'll rephrase it. She swore on her son's life that it was not intentional that she ended up killing Mr. Torres, correct?
Yes.
I object.
Approach. Objection sustained. Question is stricken. Members of the jury, questions are not evidence, and you're not to give them any weight whatsoever. Mr. J, you may proceed.
She, quote unquote, swore on her child's life that it was not intentional. That. Correct?
Before I answer, I'd like you to direct me to that part of her interview.
I'll strike it with you. It's on video. Some of Ms. Boone's diagnoses predated her relationship with Mr. Torres, correct?
Yes.
And so when diagnoses predate a violent intimate partner relationship, there is an independent cause, even though they may then later contribute to the phenomenon we see, correct?
Well, I wouldn't say that all mental disorders have an independent cause. Sometimes they're spontaneous or biological in nature.
Well, let's talk about hers. I mean, you're familiar with her prior diagnoses, and you went through her childhood, so on and so forth, correct?
I did.
So she was bringing some things with her prior to Mr. Torres' relationship, correct?
She had
these... Also, yes or no, ma'am?
Yes, she did.
Thank you. You reviewed some Advent health records, correct, of hers?
Yes.
And some Aspire records of hers, correct?
Yes.
And you would agree that there are time in the Advent health records where she goes to the hospital and then leaves before getting treated, correct?
Yes.
And there is a time when she goes to the hospital where she is described, their words, not mine, as having ETOH on board.
Yes.
Do you understand what ETOH means?
In a medical record, you would use that shorthand for alcohol.
Or ethanol, right?
Yes.
Drinking alcohol, not the other stuff.
Correct.
And in the records that you reviewed from Aspire, she came with complaints of depression in January of 2018, correct?
That's right.
And ethanol, or alcohol, is a central nervous system depressant, correct?
Yes.
And I know you're a psychologist, not a psychiatrist, so let me know if I'm pushing you too far and you're not going to answer. But you are familiar generally with the effects ethanol has on the body?
Generally, yes.
And you can and do make diagnoses of alcohol abuse disorder?
I do.
And in your professional life or personal life, are you familiar with the standard serving size of drinks when you're evaluating somebody's drinking? For instance, hey, I only drink 2 drinks a day. All right, well, are they 64-ounce mugs of beer, or are they 12-ounce? So are you familiar in that context?
It might be a question I would ask during evaluation. What are you referring to? Is it a mixed drink? Is it a shot? Like, I try to identify that.
And you ever ask if somebody says they drink 2 glasses of wine, well, how big are the glasses of wine?
Sometimes.
And is your understanding that 5 ounces is the standard serving of wine, since it's about 12% alcohol?
I'm not sure what the standard size is, but I would ask regarding, like, a wine glass.
And in January of 2018, when she came in crying and complaining of symptoms consistent with depression, she had a blood alcohol level of 0.165, correct?
I believe so.
And in October of 2018, when she ended up going to Aspire, when she was found stumbling by police, she had a blood or breath alcohol of 0.185?
I'm reacting to your description of her stumbling by police. I know she approached police for help, so.
There have been 2 sets of records, but I believe you may have the same set that I received on September 27th, 24. Can you turn to page 21 of 57 of the Aspire records?
Mine aren't numbered, but I will.
May I approach the witness?
Yes. You may.
What I'm showing you is what is page 2157 on records from Aspire that was provided to me by the defense on September 27th, 2024. And just at the top,
you can read the first or the fourth lines.
Judge, I would ask that she be allowed to read that entire paragraph under the rule of completeness.
Approach. You may proceed, Mr. J.
Thank you. All right. In October of 2018, there was a second visit to Aspire, and that was based upon her being found stumbling by law enforcement with a .185, correct?
She walked up. Okay. So I'd have to say no, the way you phrased the question.
Ma'am, Boone was stumbling due to her level of impairment, paren .185.
Yes, I would agree.
Is that part of the records you relied upon?
Yes.
Thank you. When you talked to Ms. Boone about that, she kind of just described an event of June of 2018 and blurring those two events, did she not?
No, she told me she had two different Baker acts.
Did she describe as being June of 2018?
I'll have to reference my interview note to find that if you would like me to.
No. Do you remember giving a deposition on October 1st at the state attorney's office downstairs?
I do.
And at that point in time, and I'll ask opposing party, want me to show her prior statement before I ask her about it?
I think she's got a deposition.
Do you have your transcript?
I do.
Okay.
Just
so for the record, it's page 34 that I'm referring to, line 16 and 17.
I'm with you.
Okay. She described that as June of 2018.
That's what I said in my deposition, that she was describing her experience in June of 18.
And she described this experience as going to the hospital to find a pastor, correct?
Yes.
And ends up going to what we call Lakeside then and Aspire now, right?
Yes.
And then what you described was she was talking about more of the violence that occurred specifically regarding a significant episode of Jorge driving her roughly in the car, so on and so forth, correct?
Yes.
All right. Those were two separate incidences. January, when she came looking for the pastor, correct?
So I'm just clarifying that there's a record that we started with this conversation from October of 2018, and there is a description of her trying to go to the hospital to seek a counselor. So those are two different instances.
In January of 2018, when she went to the hospital crying and signs of depression.
Bless you.
She indicated that was because her husband and son had gone out of town and she was feeling lonely and sad about having lost her job a few weeks earlier, right?
There were numerous stressors there, yes.
Nothing mentioned about any problems with somebody named Mr. Jorge or George Torres, correct?
You're talking about January?
Yes, ma'am.
So the hospital records are not referencing her relationship with George on the January date.
Now, in talking about February 23rd, 2020 with Ms. Boone, you talked to her about that on several occasions, correct?
I did.
And part of one of those conversations, at least, was about an incident that she indicated had happened the night before February 23rd, 2020, correct?
Yes.
And she indicated and told you that she had been dragged down the stairs the night before the suitcase incident, correct?
That's right.
And in part of your review of this case, you reviewed all the crime scene photos, correct?
Yes.
And those include photographs of Ms. Boone, correct?
Yes.
And were there any indications in the photographs of injuries on her consistent with being dragged down the stairs of carpet?
I didn't see inside her scalp, so I didn't see photos of inside, you know, her hair follicles and this area of her head. On her outward body, there were no indications of that.
And did you ask her how it was that she was injured during this dragging down the stairs?
I don't think I went through specific injuries to her, no.
Do you agree that alcohol intoxication affects the credibility of a historian that's providing history to you, a patient, or a client?
If they're actively intoxicated, yes.
We had talked, you and Mr. Owens, had talked about narcissistic personality disorder earlier.
Yes.
And that is a recognized diagnosis in the DSM-5-TR?
That's right.
And there's 9 of those, correct? 9 traits?
Are you talking about, you're talking about the criterion of narcissistic personality disorder?
Yes.
Yes.
Might be page 761 on your hard copy.
Thank you. All right.
Am I close? I have a digital copy.
760, but.
One of the criteria is has a grandiose sense of self-importance, for example, exaggerates achievements and talents, expects to be recognized as superior without commensurate achievements, correct?
Yes.
2 is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love, correct?
Yes.
3, belief that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood by or should associate with other special or high status people, friend, or institutions, correct?
So 3, just caveat, it says believes, not belief, but the rest of what you said I agree with is the criterion.
4, requires excessive admiration.
Yes.
5, has a sense of entitlement, unreasonable expectations of especially favorable treatment or automatic compliance with his or her expectations, correct?
Yes.
6, is interpersonally exploitive, takes advantage of others to achieve his or her own ends, correct?
Is interpersonally exploitative, I agree.
7, lacks empathy, is unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings and needs of others, correct?
Yes.
8, is often envious of others or believes that others are envious of him or her, correct?
Yes.
9, shows arrogant or haughty behaviors or attitudes.
Yes.
Now, you believe that she has traits of that disorder, correct?
Yes.
Grandiose sense of self-importance?
There are indications that she feels like that or has expressed that before.
So that's a yes?
Yes.
Preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love?
No.
You remember going to the state attorney's office on October 1st of 2024 and giving a deposition?
I do.
And it was in front of a court reporter, like Madam Court Reporter here?
Yes.
And you swore to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, correct?
Yes.
And referring to page 89, lines 18 through 20, let me know when you're ready. Are you ready?
Yes.
Did you give the following answer to the following question? Preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love? And your answer was yes?
I did answer yes there.
Okay. She does not, according, in your estimation, does not believe that she is special and unique and can only associate with high status people, correct?
No.
Does not require excessive admiration, correct?
Correct.
Does have a sense of entitlement?
Yes.
Is not interpersonally exploitive?
Correct. She is not.
And when discussing whether or not she lacked empathy or was unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings or needs of others, you indicated that that might be the case, but it's not intentional.
In other words, she's not aware if she's inconveniencing others.
So there was three of those traits, correct?
Yes.
Not five, which would be required, correct? For a diagnosis of the personality disorder.
If that were the correct diagnosis, you would need five.
All right. During your conversations with Ms. Boone, the defendant in this case, she explained to you that cheating to her means when Mr. Torres would look at pornography, correct?
Correct.
Not a real life woman, correct?
No, not that he was engaging in sexual intercourse with actual women.
Part of the records that you did not review were the text messages that were part of the phone extraction of her phone device, correct?
That's right.
You indicated in your conversation with Mr. Owens that some of the traits that are commonly seen in abusers would be control, jealousy, easily angered.
This could be, yes.
What other traits for, just common for abusers?
Being a person who segregates their victim away from other sources of support, somebody that exhibits coercive control, meaning that they would prevent the person from engaging in activities that would be independent, so restricting their ability to have independent, like life, job, money, things like that, that would be supportive of them being left, for instance. Other things would be using emotional expressions like rage to cause a physiological reaction in another person. So those could be additional descriptions.
Specifically, the materials you reviewed. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Paperwork from prior cases involving Mr. Torres and Ms. Boone?
Yes.
Medical records for Mr. Torres?
That's right.
The medical and Aspire records for Ms. Boone that we've discussed?
Yes.
The crime scene photos from the incident in February?
That's right.
Pages 1 through 413 in discovery in this case?
Right.
A photograph of a suitcase and two videos involving a suitcase?
That's right.
And additional videos on that phone, correct?
Yes.
Such as baseball bat smashing the TV?
That's part of it, yes.
And then did you review any other videos where there's conversations between Ms. Boone and Mr. Torres?
Yes.
One prior 911 call?
Yes.
Now today you had indicated that you had reviewed the photographs from some prior incidents of violence, correct?
Yes.
When is it that you did that? Is that recently?
No, there are photos included with the
prior case packages?
Case packages. Thank you. I'm not sure what to call it. So
that's fine.
All right.
All right. And did you review any body-worn camera from those prior case packages?
No, I did not. I didn't have that.
Anything else that you reviewed that I have not covered?
Are you speaking of documents only?
Yes, yes. Materials other than your 9 visits with Ms. Boone.
All right. Just checking with the funders I prepared for today. I don't know if, I guess that would be part of the discovery. The investigative report is within those 413 pages.
Okay. Did you interview anybody else personally besides Ms. Boone?
Yes.
Who else did you personally interview?
Melissa Sexton.
All right. Anybody else?
No.
You didn't interview Brian Boone, correct?
I did not.
You did not interview their child in common, correct?
No.
And you didn't review the phone text messages extracted from her device, correct?
No, I didn't.
Did you review any records from the jail?
No.
And,
Judge,
yes. The objection is sustained in part and overruled in part.
You testified earlier in the normal course of practice of forensic psychology and psychiatry, you all do rely upon the diagnoses of other experts, correct?
You can inform my opinion, yes.
And you have not reviewed any electronic communications in the form of text regarding Ms. Boone's case, correct?
No, I did not.
Or recorded phone calls of any type, correct?
Well, 911.
Other than that?
No, other than that.
Now, let's talk about the February 23rd, 2020. She told you that they didn't really have anything going on to do that particular day, correct?
Yes.
It was a Sunday, correct?
Yes.
Did some chores, and then as a reward, they could rest after doing those chores, correct?
Right.
She indicated to you that she and Mr. Torres did not begin drinking till about 4 p.m., correct?
I'll have to reference.
Page 36 of your deposition, if you care to use that.
Great, thank you. 36?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, I'm with you, around 4 p.m.
And you reviewed the crime scene photos of this case, correct?
I did.
That included receipts for some purchases that were made at Publix on February 22nd and 23rd, correct?
That's right.
And one of those receipts was a purchase for a 1.5 liter bottle of Woodbridge Chardonnay at 12:17 p.m. on February 23rd, correct?
Yes.
Did you question her about the inconsistency of them having purchased a bottle of wine at 12:17 that afternoon and not start drinking until 4 p.m.?
No.
And did she tell you that they had any wine left over from the day before that they consumed that day?
At some point, I'm not sure if it was the day that I was going through this line by line with you in my deposition, but I am aware, yes, that there was an unfinished bottle of wine from some other date.
And then, as the receipts show, there was two additional bottles of 1.5 liters of wine purchased at 12:17 p.m. and about 5:30 p.m. on the 23rd, correct?
Right.
And were you aware of approximately how much Ms. Boone, the defendant, weighed at the time of this offense, February 23rd, 2020?
Around 100 pounds.
And in the first 413 pages of discovery, I believe, was the autopsy report, correct?
Right.
And so you're aware that Mr. Torres was 103 pounds at his death?
Yes.
Do you take into account this alcohol consumption when evaluating what Ms. Boone is telling you about the events of the day?
Yes.
Did she tell you whether or not she was intoxicated by the amount of alcohol she consumed that day?
Please silence your cell phone.
Okay.
You may proceed.
So she did not describe herself as intoxicated originally when we discussed this. So
the answer is no. She did not describe herself as intoxicated.
Intoxicated, right.
Hypothetically, if she had told the jury that she was intoxicated at the time of the offense, would that affect your evaluation of her credibility in the history she provided you?
No, because that was also my opinion.
Did she indicate to you in describing the events of February 23rd, 2020, that there was any point in time she just simply did not remember?
Yes.
What points in time are those?
So she did not remember taking the videos of the suitcase, or the incident in the suitcase, until she was at the interrogation room, I guess, and then they were going through them with her. Then she recalled that.
I'm talking about specifically with you. Did she indicate that there were any portions of the night that, or day or night, that she did not remember?
I can't recall anything specifically right now.
Hypothetically, if she had indicated to the jury that she did not remember the 9 or 10 minutes immediately preceding the first video being taken, would that be inconsistent with what she told you then?
No.
Well, she didn't indicate to you that she forgot any part of the night, right?
Right, she just didn't say that, so.
Would it affect your evaluation of what she told you about the events of February 23rd, 2020, if she hypothetically has testified that she did not remember 10 minutes before the videos?
Not really, no, because the event and the course of events that she narrated to me occurred over several hours. So when you interview somebody about circumstances of an offense, it's the usual for someone to not remember every single minute for hours at a time. I can't imagine that anybody's memory could hold that much unless they have like photographic memory or something.
I'm not asking about hours and hours, an itemization of her day's events. We're talking about the 20 minutes of the offense. Does that affect the weight that you give her history she provided you? Just yes or no?
No.
Now, what she indicated to you was the day had been going well. It was fun and games, correct?
Yes.
Conflict-free?
To her, she said it was a good day. That's what she told me.
She said it was a good day?
Yes.
And there comes a point in time where the activities turn toward hide and seek, correct?
Yes.
And she goes up to the shower?
Right.
And when she comes down from the shower, that's when Mr. Torres is in this suitcase, correct?
Getting into it.
And she goes over to the suitcase and zips it, correct?
Yes.
And does she describe whether it was 100% zipped to you or just a certain percentage?
She said that it wasn't zipped all the way.
Okay. And still then, that was funny to the two of them at first, correct?
That's right.
And then there came a point in time where Mr. Torres was getting mad about being zipped in the suitcase.
She told me that he was getting mad, yes.
And that, in turn, made her mad.
That's right.
What Mr. Torres was saying was, I can't breathe, correct?
That is what's recorded on the video.
Well, I'm asking you about what you reported her saying.
Well, what made her mad was not that he was saying he couldn't breathe. It's what he was saying that was making her mad.
Well, what else was he saying?
She, at the time, she said that he said something that was making her mad. And so that's the extent of what we talked about at that moment.
So you didn't elaborate what something was that made her mad, correct?
Right. She said he said something that made her mad, and that started making her mad.
You didn't find it important to learn what specifically he said that made her mad, correct?
I don't agree that I didn't find it important.
Okay. Then explain. Why wouldn't you ask that question?
Because as a person who is traumatized is describing their experience, as a trained clinician, you will allow open-ended discussion of that experience. And so it's not an interrogation. You don't go asking confrontational questions at the time of their first narration.
Well, you had 9 visits with her. Did you follow up on your 9th visit?
I asked her different questions about
did you ever ask
be
her,
confrontational.
Did you ever ask her specifically in any of your 9 visits with her what it was that he said that made her mad?
No.
She never described him doing anything to make her mad, but it was words, correct?
Right.
And once she got mad, she decided that she was going to leave him in there for 2 minutes.
That's right.
Not 3, not 1, but 2, correct?
That's what she said.
And the reason she was doing that was because she wanted him to understand how it feels to be choked and what she had experienced.
That's right.
Did you ask her why she didn't let him out of the suitcase after 2 minutes?
Yes, I did actually ask her that.
And what did she say?
Well, she thought that he could get out himself. That's one thing. She said that when she was able to unzip it, it was not some significant thing. She was able to unzip it easily. So she said it never occurred to her that he couldn't get out.
You may proceed.
And you reviewed the still photograph of the suitcase as well as the 2 videos.
Right.
And did you understand what the metadata or what the timestamps were for each of those items?
I'm sure when I reviewed it, I saw the timestamp.
Yeah. Would you agree that 20 minutes is 10 times as long as 2 minutes?
I would.
And if Mr. Torres had not been able to get himself out of the suitcase within 20 minutes, she didn't indicate that she let him out, correct?
She did not.
She described to you, Ms. Boone being the she, that she was helpful to the police?
Yes.
Do you agree with that assessment that she was helpful to the police?
In the sense that she was having conversations with them without counsel, I would consider that helpful to the police.
Mm-hmm. Do you think lying to the police is helpful to the police's investigation?
No.
Do you agree that she was not truthful with them?
Yes, I think that I would agree with that.
And when she described getting Mr. Torres out of the suitcase, she described stretching his little legs?
Yes.
And she stated to you there was no fight that day, correct?
That's right.
Just wanted him to be uncomfortable.
I need to clarify. Physical fight.
That, right.
Yes.
Just wanted him to be uncomfortable.
Yes.
Correct. And then there was a description of a bat and her using it to nudge, right?
Poke.
And so do we agree that that means like poking out like this as opposed to swinging it like you're a baseball hitter?
I would agree with you.
And you reviewed the autopsy report, correct?
believe so.
Did you get an opportunity to review the autopsy photos?
Yes.
Did you question her when she said that she only poked him with the bat?
No.
Not in any of your 9 visits?
Did I question her about whether... Can you just repeat the question? I want to make sure I'm answering it correctly.
Yes, okay. Did you ever, in considering the autopsy report and the autopsy photographs that you reviewed...
Yes.
When she said that she nudged or poked with the baseball bat, did you ever question her about that, given the severity of his injuries?
So, to answer correctly, I did question her about how she used the bat. Okay. And she reiterated that she poked and she gestured what she meant. So I did question her about that.
And did you have any questions about that history she relayed to you, given the other evidence in this case that you reviewed?
Just in contrast to the interrogation video. So that...
It didn't contrast to the autopsy photographs or report.
Judge, I object.
Roach. You may proceed.
Did she indicate all this nudging and or poking with the bat was done while he was inside the suitcase?
Yes.
She never told you that there was any nudging or poking with the bat when he was outside of the suitcase?
Correct.
She indicated that she ended up flipping the suitcase over face down?
That's right.
Did she tell you about Mr. Torres calling his brother earlier that evening?
No.
Did she ever give you a history about a loud boom occurring inside of her townhouse that evening?
No.
And you never had the opportunity, obviously, to interview Mr. Torres about these things, correct?
Of course not, no.
No other questions?
Any redirect examination?
Briefly, Judge.
Yes, sir.
The state attorney talked to you about power and control, that an abusive partner will use power and control over the victim in a intimate partner violence situation?
Yes.
Threatening someone's dogs, is that an example of someone using control?
Yes.
Taking car keys from the other party, is that an example of control?
If they're withholding, yes.
Taking a phone and withholding a phone?
Yes.
A debit card?
Yes.
Destroying a home, TVs, putting holes in the wall?
Yes.
Not helping pay the rent and other bills?
So I would say that that could be withholding, that could go under coercive control of another person.
What about violating a court order to have no contact with the person?
Yes.
That's all the questions.
Thank you. Can this witness be released?
As far as the state is concerned, thank you.
Mr. Owens?
Yes.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Just allow me a moment to pack up.
Collect all your stuff, ma'am. No worries.
I'm sorry.
No apologies necessary.
Can you report, sir?
Yes. members of the jury, it is 4:01. At this point in time, we're going to go ahead and take that afternoon break. I got a couple things I got to address with counsel as well, so maybe a little bit longer, but we'll bring you back in as promptly as possible. Again, same instruction I've given you before. Please don't conduct any independent investigation or research as the person, places, things, or charge involved in this case, and do not have any conversations amongst yourselves or anyone else about that. We'll bring you back in as promptly as possible. Thank you.
All right.
Y'all can be seated. Let's go ahead and take a recess, a comfort break for any of us, and then we can address any argument with regard to the any other evidence that the defense may be seeking. Let's come back here in about 10 minutes, so 4:13, okay? All right, thank you. We'll be in a short recess. All right, we're back on the record. Case number 2020, CF-2603, State of Florida versus Sarah Boone. Appearances for the state.
Dave Ketchstar on behalf of the state.
William Jay.
Defense.
James Owens for the defense.
Tony Henderson for Sarah Boone.
And Kevin Beck for Sarah Boone.
All right. Ms. Boone is seated at counsel's table wearing the same dark gray suit and maroon blouse from this morning. Mr. Owens, are there any other matters we need to address before you rest in the presence of our jury?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Henderson?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Judge, there's two orders that I'm going to be requesting the court to take judicial notice of under 90.202 sub 6. And the orders of no contact. I have copies of the certified copies of the orders. May I approach?
Yes. State, have you seen them?
Doesn't change my position.
Understand. But you have seen them?
I have not.
You have not seen them. Okay.
Doesn't change my position.
Understood. Okay. You can bring them on up. Thank you, sir. Court has been provided no contact orders issued in case number 2019 MM5062 on or about June 16, 2019, and a no contact order in case number 2019 MM5114 issued on or about June 19, 2019. Both cases styled State of Florida versus Torres George Jr. Let me hear any argument as to the judicial notice from you, Mr. Henderson.
Judge, I think they're relevant. I think just from the testimony of redirect of Dr. Harper saying that an element of control, and control is talked about greatly by the state, when I point out things hypothetically that they refer to. They refer to them as hypothetically. However, they refer to things that they're developing under this boom. These show that they were in fact orders, and the orders were for no contact. So these are elements of control in relation to George Torres.
Okay. Response.
So in regards to the judicial notice aspect, we don't dispute that that can be a substitute for authenticity. However, they're not relevant, they're not admissible. They contain statements that were made by people who are not testifying. Just because an expert relies on something doesn't mean that it's admissible. What happened during redirect with Mr. Owens was he was asking, what are the hypothetical things that we rely upon in making these determinations as an expert about whether there's battered spouse syndrome or not? So one of the many inadmissible things that he mentioned was pretrial orders of no contact. So it's fine. The expert can certainly rely on the fact that there may have been pretrial contact orders or no contact orders that were involved in this case, and she considered that. That doesn't make them admissible. There has been testimony, I believe, from Ms. Moon that there was pre-trial no contact orders and violations of them. It's not a fact in dispute. It just that doesn't mean that the paperwork comes in as evidence. So that's our objection, is it's irrelevant and hearsay. Just because an expert relies on inadmissible evidence doesn't make it admissible.
What's your response to hearsay?
Judge, I think under the, as to hearsay, I think the statute takes care of that itself, because it says that the court can take judicial notice. So that's the foundationary part. And it's not hearsay, it's an order of the court. We're in a case where we've gotten in evidence of past domestic abuse. There was evidence of it, started with the state, about control. And these are things of control. And I'm sure the state's going to, in rebuttal, they're going to come up with things that they feel, either by body cam or any other evidence, that shows her exercising control. This shows Mr. Torres exercising control. It is very relevant.
But how's it not hearsay? Just because it's a court record, it's still out of court statement. It's certainly being offered for the truth of the matter asserted, no contact order.
Judge, that's why we have the thing that the court could take judicial notice of. There are certain things that court...
But the case law says you can't utilize judicial notice to get around hearsay. I know 9202 says that I may take judicial notice. Yeah. 9203 says that upon sufficient notice being provided, which the state is conceding based on their argument, the court shall take judicial notice of items identified in 9202. But my question is, the case law, as identified in Professor Earhart's treatise, specifically says in Dufour v. State, 69 Southern 3rd, 235, which specifically talks about notice of judicial documents at a court file, that doesn't get you around hearsay. So what's your response?
Let me go through hearsay in my mind again.
You're fine. Take your time.
Judge?
Yes.
I'll start this way first. One of the exceptions to the hearsay rule is business records exception. So if it's a business record and it's kept in a normal course of business, then someone can come in and lay the foundational things for the business record exceptions to the hearsay rule. However, in this case, that would not be needed if the court takes judicial notice of it. That eliminates the necessity to do a business record in that foundation, because the court, under the statute 90.2026, can take judicial notice of court orders. This is a court order, it's certified. I think it's an exception to the hearsay rule. Also, I think the probative value of these documents outweighs any prejudicial effect.
Any other argument?
No, you wrote.
Any other argument, State?
The fact that there was a pretrial court order of no contact between them is going to come in. I mean, on one of the body-worn cameras, Mr. Torres is like, well, you know, the court said I couldn't, but she said I could come. And I believe she testified to that during her examination. My objection is to the paper. And the grounds that I've argued.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. State v. Mobley, 98 Southern 3rd, 124 by the Florida 5th District Court of Appeal, cited in 2012, says that there's a procedure that specifically needs to be followed for judicial notice, as set forth in 9202 and 9203. State is conceding that although there's not a writing, they're not objecting to the judicial notice concept. They're objecting to the evidentiary bases. I do find that it is relevant, but the problem is I have with hearsay. And the court, in relying on the Florida Supreme Court decision in Dufour, D-U-F-O-U-R v. State, 69 Southern 3rd, 235, at pinpoint 253 by the Florida Supreme Court in 2011, which states, while the court may take judicial notice of documents in a court file which were properly placed there, this notice would not make the contents of the documents admissible if they were subject to challenge, such as when a document is protected by privilege or constitutes hearsay. It is an out-of-court statement that is being offered for the truth, to wit, it is a no-contact order, and the requisite requirements for a business record under 98036 subsection A have not been met, nor has there been a certificate from the custodian of records as to those things, as required by section 6, paragraph C, and the timeliness of a certification. So I cannot accept judicial notice of these two documents, even though the state is not conceding the procedure for judicial notice. I am sustaining the state's objection as to hearsay under the grounds and the exceptions that you have offered.
Judge, we do have the clerk of court subpoenaed. I don't know where they are. I assume they're somewhere in this building. I believe they sent some message to us back before the hurricane about what they knew were to come, and we said to be continued. So we haven't gotten back up with them yet. So it would take me some time to check on that. It's 4:30.
Was the subpoena still for this time period?
Yes, I believe it was a 3-week period.
Okay.
But we haven't followed back up with them. This came up.
Sure.
Late.
I'll give you an opportunity to do that.
I don't know whether you could just go ahead and send them to home for the evening, and let me see if we could find the clerk maybe in the morning, and then we could rest in the morning, and then the state has Dr. Werner. It's probably going to take me a little bit.
I'll give you that opportunity. Absolutely.
Right,
if you want to, sure. If you want to try to do it now or do it tomorrow, I'll leave it to you. Because I can't imagine it would take long if we're able to get a records custodian or a person to lay the foundation. I can't imagine it would take that long.
Aren't they in the building?
Yes. Third floor. Sure.
I suggest we go ahead and let the jury go. It's 4:30.
Okay.
I don't know how long it's going to take them to do that, but we could present that in the morning and then rest in the morning, and then they can.
All right. That works for me.
I'm not going to make some poor employee come in and do that. I was conceding the authenticity. I just don't understand the relevance of it coming in.
Are you now withdrawing your hearsay objection?
Well, I still believe it's hearsay, but I think it's cured by it's a public record and it's stamped and all that stuff.
I know, but no one's made that argument yet.
I don't want to punish some poor clerk.
Okay.
I won't object to them coming in, but it's a slippery slope for other records. We'll see what we do as well.
Okay. All right. So the state is still maintaining its hearsay objection. I do find that it is relevant.
I don't want to make the clerk come in.
So then what do you want to do, Mr. J?
I'm stipulating to if the hang-up for the court and the defendant is that they believe a clerk of the court needs to come in and testify, I'm conceding that issue so that person does not have to do whatever that issue is.
Okay. All right. Fine. Then based on the court on the concession by the defense, by the state, excuse me, do you have any other objections with regard to these two non-contact orders, Mr. J?
No more objections.
Okay. For the reasons previously articulated, I do find it's relevant. The state has withdrawn its hearsay objection. Do you want these as a composite or individual?
Individually.
Okay. Madam Clerk, could you pre-mark them and then we'll identify them, please? The no contact order in 2019 MM5062, dated June 16, 2019, has been pre-marked as AB. And the no contact order in 19 MM5114, dated June 19, 2019, is dated as AC. Mr. Owens, you can approach. Let's just tackle a couple other housekeeping matters that we have. You can move those in when our jury returns into evidence. Are there any other witnesses, evidence, or testimony, sir, that you're going to be offering this afternoon?
I don't believe so, but we're intending on resting either this afternoon or first thing in the morning, but we want some time to talk to Sarah Boone and explain to her, you know, why we think we should rest, not call any further witnesses, not introduce any other exhibits, just to make sure that we're all on the same page with her about what our strategy is. So we need a little bit of time. I don't know if you want to go ahead and excuse the jury for the night and then have us come back in the morning and do that colloquy with the court, with the defendant, but we do need some time with her.
Okay. All right, so then here's what we'll do. I'll bring in the jury and I'll excuse them. You can save those pieces of paper and you can move them into evidence tomorrow morning and then present. That'll work. Thank you, Madam Clerk. We'll bring the jury back at 9 a.m. tomorrow and you can continue with your evidence presentation at that time, including but not limited to calling any additional witnesses. Court can have any further colloquy with the defense at that time. The state then can put on its rebuttal case. State, how long do you anticipate ballparking it for the court, your rebuttal case?
I don't believe Dr. Werner will take long on our part. I'm not sure how long it'll take on their part. And then there's about...
How long is that for your part?
I'm not going to hold you to it, Mr. J.
Probably less than 30.
How long do you anticipate your cross being? And ballpark it. Again, I won't hold you to it.
If the direct is 30, my cross is probably going to be 30.
Okay, what else do you have to present?
And then there will be about 2 hours of videos from body-worn camera and from the phone extraction. Mm-hmm. And then reading a good bit of phone text messages from the record.
Separate apart from the two-hour video presentation. Okay, got it. All right. Okay, so that's going to take us in tomorrow afternoon. Are we going to be in a position for the state to rest its rebuttal case tomorrow and proceed with closings, or are we going to proceed with closings Friday morning after had the opportunity to have a full, not that we would not have a full charging conference, but after having a charging conference Thursday afternoon with regard to the jury instructions?
I just don't know how long. I think all the instructions are pretty relatively simple and straightforward, except for 3-6.
Agreed. 3-6-F. I agree.
That's not going to be simple or straightforward in any way.
The instruction is complicated. I agree.
And the special jury instruction on their spouse that we're going to be requesting.
Okay.
There's different courts, Judge, here in Florida that have used the special instructions. There's different courts in other states that have used a different instruction. We've looked at a bunch of them, so I don't know what this court is going to be inclined to do, if the court would be so inclined to give a special instruction on by the spouse, and whether or not you want to consider one of the local courts, the Palm Beach County case that I mentioned before with Dr. Brennan. There was a special instruction in that case. I mean, we've got some from other states. I don't know what the state's position is going to be on that. So it may...
Has a draft of that been circulated yet?
Not to the court.
Okay. All right. All right. So here's what we're going to do. Okay. Let's just see how long the rebuttal case takes. And then if we have to do closings Friday morning, we'll have to do closings Friday morning. I'd rather go through than and spend the time to make sure that we're all on the same page with regard to the instructions, especially due to the complicated nature of 3.6F. With regard to those, the court will have Ms. Berrios email you. She just started her drive back to Kissimmee, so it might come a little bit later this evening. I will have Ms. Berrios email to you all the red line that the court has worked on so far of the jury instructions provided by the state. The defense is to provide its markup of the 3.6F and 3.6G instructions and any other defensive instructions that the defense seeks to have read to the jury.
Before 9 o'clock in the morning?
I think so. That gives the state the opportunity during the lunch hour to review them in advance of our charging conference.
I'll have it done before 9.
Okay.
Judge?
Yes, sir.
There's one thing. The state had filed a motion requesting a special instruction as to, I think it goes to voluntariness. I read their motion and their proposed instruction. I have no objection to it.
Okay. All right. So just so the record's clear, we're referring to the state's request for special jury instruction regarding Florida criminal standard jury instruction 3.9B, defendant's statements filed October 22, 2024. The provision that the state seeks to add to the 3.9B instruction reads as follows. Law enforcement is not legally required to ask a suspect whether he or she wants to talk to law enforcement after Miranda warnings are read to a suspect. This is, however, one of the factors you may consider whether the defendant's statements were voluntarily made. The state, have I read that correctly?
I believe so, without reading it myself.
And defense, you have no objection?
No objection, Judge. And it's my understanding there's already the standard instruction. That's an add-on to this.
It's just a matter of where y'all want it. So I will add this to the red line to be set out this afternoon. Ms. Boone, I want to have a couple other conversations with you, ma'am. Again, I don't want to know specifics of anything that you or your attorneys have discussed, just whether or not you've had those discussions. Did you hear the court read the proposed additional language to the jury instruction about your statements?
Just now?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you please read it one more time?
I can. So just to give you some background, ma'am, there's a form instruction. It's 3.9B, and it talks about how the jury is to consider your statements that were read to them and provided in evidence through the course of the trial, and that they're to consider the voluntariness of those statements and whether they were coerced. The state is seeking to add the following language to that instruction. Law enforcement is not legally required to ask a suspect whether he or she wants to talk to law enforcement after Miranda warnings are read to a suspect. This is, however, one of the factors you may consider whether the defendant's statements were voluntarily made. Do you understand that portion of the instruction?
Yes.
Do you have any questions about it?
No.
Okay. Have you had conversations with your attorneys about the proposed additional language that I just read to you?
Not yet.
Okay. Let's go ahead and have those conversations tonight when y'all break, and we can go over this tomorrow when we have the charging conference. But I'll go ahead and add it to the red line for the purposes of our discussion tomorrow.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. Anything else, State, we need to address?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Defense, anything else?
No, sir.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring our panel back in, and we'll tell them we'll commence tomorrow with additional evidence and testimony at 9 a.m. Thank you.
Authorized jury's entering.
State, do you recognize our jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense, do you recognize our jury?
I do.
Thank you. Y'all can be seated. Members of the jury, good late afternoon, early evening, I think. Again, could you just raise those hands, confirm that you complied with the court's instructions? All right, record reflect, all hands have been raised. Members of the jury, it's 4:43. We're gonna go ahead and break for the evening. I'm gonna ask you to be back here at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. We'll continue with evidence and testimony presentation by the defense. And then we'll proceed accordingly thereafter. I want to read you the same instruction that I've read you multiple times over the last week, and I beg your forgiveness as you hear it again, but I just have to keep reminding you. Jurors, you must not conduct any investigation on your own. This includes reading newspapers, watching television, or using a computer, cell phone, the internet, any electronic device, or any other means at all to get information related to this case or the people and places involved in this case. This applies whether you are in the courthouse, at home, or anywhere else. You must not visit places mentioned in the trial or use the internet to look at maps or pictures to see any place discussed during the trial. Jurors, do not watch local news or read local newspapers. Jurors must not have discussions of any sort with friends, family members, or even your fellow jurors about the case or the people and places involved. So do not let anyone make comments to you or ask questions about the trial. I want to stress again that just as you must not talk about this case face to face, you must not talk about this case by using an electronic device. You must not use phones, computers, or other electronic devices to communicate. Do not send or accept any messages related to this case or your jury service. Do not discuss this case or ask for advice by any means at all, including posting information on an internet website, chat room, or blog. With that, members of the jury, again, I thank you for your time, your sacrifice, and your attentiveness in this matter, and we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Y'all can be seated. Thank you. Anything else we need to discuss, State, before we go into recess for the evening? Defense, anything else?
No, sir.
All right, we'll see y'all tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Thank you very much. Court's off the record.
More continuing coverage in the suitcase murder. The trial of Sarah Boone is on the way from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.